My name is Jeff Lerner, and I interview elite performers from a wide range of disciplines, entrepreneurs, athletes, celebrities, scientists, artists, and more. This is Unlock Your Potential. Welcome to another episode of Unlock Your Potential. This is Jeff Lerner, your host, getting to be back with you, having amazing conversations with amazing human beings. Today, we are having one of the conversations I've been most interested in and excited about for a long time. We are talking with Elizabeth Spraggins, who's also known by another name that we'll get into. And Elizabeth used to be in the adult industry. And I'm not going to even try to give some exhaustive bio here. I'm just going to say she used to be in that industry. She's not now. She's now, I think of like Harriet Tubman running an underground railroad to help move people from Camp A to Camp B. And she's kind of doing that for people trying to, wanting to get out of that industry. It's fascinating. We have so much exciting stuff to talk about. Let's get right into it. Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jeff. That was, wow. I don't think anyone has ever introduced me with so much, you know, oomph and gum. Thank you so much for that. That's awesome. I really am happy to be here.
That literally just came to mind at the last minute. It's like trying to shuttle people, you know, out of a life that isn't what they want into, yeah. A, you know, I don't know. It just seemed apropos. I'm sure I offended somebody, but,
everyone's, you know, offended by something these days, Jeff.
Must be a day ending in Y.
Yeah, right. If you're going to do it big.
Exactly. So I've read some of your story, and obviously I've gotten to know you. For those, I guess I'll put out the disclosure. Elizabeth is actually a student in my entrepreneurial education platform, Entre Institute, which is how I got acquainted with her. But that is not at all really what we're here to talk about, is like some kind of Entre infomercial or anything. I think we've been a part in her story that I'm very proud of, but it's really her story is what we're here to talk about, not so much the role that Entre's played. And I've read a little bit of your story, Elizabeth, but I'm not even going to attempt to do it justice. Why don't we start there? Like, tell us your story.
Oh, wow. Well, my mother and my father met. I won't get back that far, but believe it or not, Entre Institute, and I know you didn't want the interview to start or to continue to go this way, it is an enormous part of who I am today. So hopefully later in the show, we will get to talk about that and the magnitude of the influence that this opportunity provided for me to step out of the adult industry. I had no courage to do so until I met your people.
Well, that's touching and inspiring, and I'm infinitely grateful for that. But yeah, set it up. So life before Entre, how'd you get there, and what was it?
No, I was a spicy individual. I learned early in life to, and this, I don't want to be distasteful because I know you have a diverse audience of all backgrounds and beliefs, and I happen to be on one spectrum of humanity of what I like to call a reformed dirtbag, right? I make jokes. I don't believe that about myself, but that's what I say. Hopefully people are comfortable with the fact that I used to live a life that you hear about in stories and see on movies. Wink, wink, wink. Yeah. Right.
let me just state for the record, Elizabeth, this is a no holds barred conversation. If anybody wants to be offended, then they can find a less offensive show. Maybe go watch some PBS or something. For their entertainment. You used to be a porn star. Let's just say it.
Oh, can we say that?
You used to have sex as part of your livelihood. This is all on the table. I Googled you in the internet adult movie database, and I think I found 5,891 credits. I don't want to be precious about this at all. But I also don't want to be like gratuitous. This isn't about making people giggle. I think there's a very serious subtext to this story, and that's why I wanted to have you on the show.
I appreciate the accolades and the respect of doing due diligence before having me in front of your people. But my story isn't dark. I mean, there are dark parts of the experience I had, and there are dark parts of the experiences that people are still having in the industry. But there's no reason to allow that darkness to follow me into my today and my tomorrow. So I can laugh about it, because I teach people this every day. When you can laugh about something or you can talk about something, it no longer has power over you. So I don't want my past to make me feel ashamed, and I want other people to have a laugh with me. So yeah, I was a bit of a bunny rabbit on camera. I ate a lot of vegetables and sipped a lot of juice.
Wow.
Fuck, man. I don't know. Hey, you said no holds barred, and I'm trying to be a good Christian woman these days. But you know, every once in a while I'm imperfect. So let's have fun today.
Yeah. No, this should be a fun conversation. And I just want you to feel comfortable, but I don't want you to worry too much about keeping the audience comfortable. I just want you to feel comfortable and speak from the heart.
That sounds good to me. I started out in life as it's a bit difficult to explain without disrespecting, you know, my beginnings, but I wasn't exactly welcome among my peers. I was viciously, viciously bullied. I mean, I was a goofy looking kid, goofy. Can you imagine just this blonde, blue-eyed Italian, the only one in my family for generations with this curly hair that would make a mixed child look like, you know, like, what the hell, man? So I had bad skin. I had curly hair. I had the braces and the really effed up teeth. And I was fun to make fun of. I was. And of course, coming from a super Catholic family, by the way, that's how I wound up a porn star, is with that restrictive upbringing, right? Mm-hmm. So I used to get bullied like crazy. I mean, I would get beat up by boys and girls. I mean, how, man, I'm an overachiever, Jeff. I like to include all kinds. So when I got my ass kicked, it was just by everybody. I didn't discriminate.
Yeah.
But
I was actually, no, I'm going to hold my thought. I do for some context. I had some sex educators on the show recently. And I guess I'll just say this. One of the things we talked about is how parents, by often being kind of puritanical and restrictive around sexuality, so often send their kids careening in the opposite direction. So,
oh, it was so much more fun than just careening off the edge. My upbringing was very isolationist, meaning I wasn't allowed to date outside of my race. So the first thing I did was go get pregnant in high school by someone outside of my race. That was my first FU to, you know, that totalitarianism. And then, you know, of course, gay sex is bad. So I went and I did that for a minute. And then, you know, poly sex is bad. And I went and I did that for a living. I mean, you know, I kind of touched on everything because I like to do that overachieving in everything that I do.
So yeah, I mean, walk us through, if you could, the path. I mean, and again, I think, like, this is an industry that has probably way more mythology around it than clarity of fact. But I mean, how do people actually become involved in that industry? And to some degree, I assume you represent, you probably speak as proxy for a lot of women.
I do. I believe I do. And I feel comfortable representing myself as a voice of some people. But I've had over a decade of experience in the industry and being on camera. Now, there were 5 years before that where I was doing a bunch of other stuff that I don't know if we could talk about. But it involved being on stage and getting naked for people who would just give me money. So I know in depth and intimately why women would get into the work. And most of it was out of desperation. They didn't know what their choices were.
So what was the situation you found yourself in that resulted in that?
My story is a little bit different. My story is a little bit different than the common story. I mean, you can usually tell who feels forced to get into the industry because there's a lot of self-medicating. I mean, a lot of them develop really overwhelming drug addiction issues and alcoholism in order to numb themselves to the work because the money's so good. Now, that's when they feel like they're being forced into it by circumstance or maybe somebody else. And hopefully we could talk about that later today. I got into it because I had tried my entire life to be something I wasn't. And I didn't have a mentor or a guide to show me that didn't necessarily mean get into sex work, but you know, that's where I landed and I made the best of it. And I was good at it. I, you know, I'm sorry. I'm immature today, Jeff. I'm so happy to see you. But I mean, it, you know, what people don't connect with the adult industry and sex work is that it's a business. Mm-hmm. And if a woman is meant to last any amount of time in a business, she's got to know the ins and outs of running a business. There are certain things that need to be done, certain behaviors, and certain observations and continuing education, which sounds stupid because copulating and, you know, is a biological habit. So you wouldn't think that there's a lot you need to learn about that, but surprise.
Well, so how did you, yeah, I mean, I read your backstory and, you know, you basically said you tried having normal, call it normal jobs.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that went about as well for you as it did for me the one time I tried it. And you're sort of like, I'm psychologically unemployable. Or yeah. You actually referenced abusive workplaces.
Yes. Yeah, I was raised and developed a Captain Save-A-Ho attitude, no pun intended. I was so viciously bullied that when people finally stopped bullying me and I would observe other people being bullied, I took up that role of being protector, of being savior of the poor little ones that couldn't protect themselves. So I developed that attitude of being a warrior, if you will, and, you know, standing up when things were wrong and voicing my opinion when I thought something didn't sit right with me. And in a workplace where the guy or a gal who signs your check doesn't really need to hear all of that, it didn't work out. It didn't work out for me.
So you would be in workplaces where maybe you disagreed with the treatment of other people in the workplace and you would be the one to stand up for what you believed. And as a result, you'd probably get fired.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I got fired once. I developed an attitude where I would walk away from jobs. Okay. I would say, you know, if this I'm out, like, you know, this is not for me. You guys can go. I'm not taking a bullet for you or in certain places, right? You're not going to get me killed because you guys are idiots. And, you know, you people need to follow me and go do something new with yourselves because this person's going to get you killed. It was, you know, different situations. Different levels of danger. But yeah, I would always take the role of leader among my group. It's always been that way for me. Because, you know, when I was younger, I was, you know, the second of four kids. And I was the surprise of the four, right? But do you think that would make me the youngest? But no, I was born right after my oldest sibling, my sister. And I make jokes that I'm an Irish twin because first time mom and dad got together after the baby was born, I show up 9 months later, and that was kind of like, well, shit, what do we do now?
No, please continue.
That was my introduction into life of just being there, but not necessarily being wanted or of being celebrated for being in a place. And I said, you know what? If the rest of you are going to see me as an intrusion or as simply an accessory to a situation, I'm going to make myself useful and I'm going to make myself feel good about who I am. And I've found that the way to do that was to lead and to teach other people and to lift others up out of their suffering.
So you talked about one of the things I read that you wrote, talked about how you were like kind of, let's say, really goofy or awkward and got bullied a lot. And then, as I suppose happens for some women, you went through puberty and just developed these magical powers to transfix men and get them to do your bidding. So talk to me about that and frankly, how that fed into, you know, where you ended up later.
It's kind of a cruel joke, really. But, you know, I see it as reparations for time served, right? So I would get viciously bullied, and I mean like physical violence. People would just beat me up for the fun of it because I was so goofy looking. I'm like that kid you see in a movie who's having someone shoved into a locker and, you know, books thrown at their head and shit. And one day I woke up and I think I just brushed my hair differently or something. I don't remember what happened that day, but I remember walking into school and the air was different. And I'm like, okay, what is going on? Because nobody's throwing anything at me. Nobody's trying to shove me into a locker and people are staring. And I'm kind of like, huh, what are you, I'm trying to watch my language. You know, like, what are you a-holes up to now? Like, what am I in for today? Am I going to wind up in, you know, in the forest behind the school in pieces and trash bags? You know, what are you guys going to do to me today? And then I remember that very same day, someone made a comment about my figure who used to torture me. And I looked at that SAB and I was like, is that right? Okay. So they would think that simply by paying me a compliment as a female, as a woman, that I was going to forget the 15 years of torture I endured. You're right, you know? And I said, okay, so how am I going to make this work for me? Instantly, that was my attitude. How am I going to make this work for me? He just showed his hand right there. He thought it was interesting that my figure appeared a certain way that day, when just a few days before that, this was somebody who was trying to put, you know, stab the air out of my tires. So, okay. Developed an attitude, Jeff.
So, okay. So you've got a number of, let's say, early influences. You talked about not feeling like you belonged. You know, your kids weren't necessarily stoked to have another one on the way so close to the first one. And then you developed this bewitching skill as a, you know, flowering female or whatever. I sound like a nerd trying to talk about this stuff. But
you and me are both nerds, Jeff Lerner. We're in good company.
And then you go out into the world as a, let's say, a really attractive female who's also got some
attitude problems.
Let's call it some pent up resentment or residue from bullying and probably from being hyper objectified by males.
And all of that.
Then you go out into the world and try to make an honest living doing a traditional thing. And that you basically, I'm sure, frankly, it probably didn't help you. I don't know the types of places you were working, but you know, looking the way I suppose you looked at that time probably didn't do you any favors.
No, it didn't do me any damn favors because I'm trying to be taken seriously for having, you know, super, super professional jobs. And I'm overperforming like I do in everything that I do because I don't believe in doing anything half-assed. And I've done that my whole life. So when I'm in this corporate or, you know, professional environment, I'm thinking I'm going to be treated right because I'm working hard and I'm delivering results. And I'm putting in the over and above and beyond effort. But they weren't interested in the results I was producing. They were more interested in what kind of misconduct I would permit and what kind of misconduct I would continue, because I didn't say no all the time. And that kind of bit me in the ass too. I'm a human being, right?
Well, so, I mean, it's just, it's interesting. I feel like every person in adult entertainment, there's a story it doesn't just happen. And so at a certain point, you know, what was the decision moment when you were like, okay, I'm going to walk off the beaten path down this alternative road, and this is why I'm going to do it. And this is, you know, this is the thought process that I'm going through to convince myself to do it. And like take me back to that moment.
Oh, wow. I remember it like it was yesterday. I was on a business trip and I had been away from my family for 2 weeks to provide. I was in charge of a project for a large group of people creating a fitness program.
And by family, do you mean spouse and or children, or do you mean parents?
Both.
Okay.
Both. So, and it was my ex-husband, not this one. And I had been away for 2 weeks, and the women who were older than me, who were observing me, come forward with this project, this effective, amazing thing that I created, which I still have a copy of, by the way. Happy to show you one day. It was amazing. I put so much thought and energy into this, and it was a superior delivery. And it was dismissed. My effort, my months of effort in producing this thing that I delivered was dismissed for someone who was being celebrated for their identity politics. And I'd had enough. I said, I have broken my back over this thing that I didn't have to do, that I volunteered to do. And instead, the individual with the identity politics celebration took credit for my work. And even though I had all of my notes and the rough and the receipts of the production, it was, I was swept under the rug. And at that point, I was just like, this, I'm out. And I walked away again, I walked away and I decided I'm never going to do that again. I'm going to work for myself now.
Yeah. So this, it, It's interesting how I think this is such a common thing. And you know, obviously at Entre, we talk a lot about this, but like they call it the Rosenthal effect or the Pygmalion effect, where like over time, as you treat people, people conform to the expectations around the way that they're treated for good or for bad, right? If they go into a classroom and they tell the teacher, hey, that's a gifted student, you need to, you know, they're extra smart, then eventually they will outperform their peers, even if it was total BS, because everybody just treats them like they're smart.
Yeah.
But it works on the flip side too, right? And then eventually, if people want to caricaturize, you know, an attractive white lady as being a dumb blonde, as being, you know, eye candy, as being, you know, somebody whose more serious efforts are going to be dismissed, then like eventually you're like, well, shit, if I can't beat them, oh, it's almost like if I can't beat them, join them or go along with it, right?
I mean,
use it to my advantage.
This was right around the time when I don't want to rat myself out totally, but this is around the time when homosexuality became acceptable in the military. And then all of a sudden people had to be especially celebratory of gays in the military, which I don't have a problem with gays. I'm gay on Tuesday, right? I have love for all people. But this particular person who did not do any of the work was given credit for the work simply because the people had to show that they were okay with the gay person who was in the group. And right. So that's what I mean. And it just, I became so bitterly jaded, especially after all of the office politics I had to play. And, you know, what you were talking about, you know, call somebody smart, they'll act smart, or call somebody dumb and they'll try harder to prove you wrong. I do both, but I'm also pretty independent. I've learned, especially in the adult industry, that the opinions of others only matters when it comes to matters of sales. So me as a person, I separate myself from that.
That's really interesting. The opinions of others matters when it comes to sales. So in other words, I don't really care what people think.
No.
But in terms of my value in as a business or as a business, as an entrepreneur or a performer, right, I'm going to very much consider the opinions of others if I think that they can help me in that regard.
A little bit. I mean, you know, we learn a lot about how to find your market, find your ideal customer. And that was a concept that I've already started to adopt before I began on this journey. And I got tired of chasing people. I got tired, Jeff, you know, and in the adult business, part of longevity is learning the ideal customer and who is going to be most drawn to the entertainment being produced by a particular person. Right. And it's the same in business. It's the same as what I do every day. Learn who the person is that's most likely to want, need, or buy what it is that you have to offer. So it wasn't a super stretch, but I had some adjustments to do leaving the industry. I had to change mind waves, if you will, from the product for sale was no longer my appearance and my ability to get someone to leave their reality for a few moments, to now it's to get them back into their reality and then help them rewire the way that they see that. Whole different ballgame for me.
Yeah, that's and it makes more sense now what you were saying about the opinions of others. It's almost like the appetites of others or the desires of the consumer or the opinions
weakness
that we have to listen to as marketers.
They are weaknesses.
As business owners. So, okay, so I don't want to get quite to, like, I love that inversion you just described. It's like before I was trying to draw people out of reality. Now I'm almost trying to reconnect those who do that back to reality. But take me back to, so you walk out of your job and you're like, that's it. I'm not doing this anymore.
I'm done.
I'm going to go over there. Like, what was over there? What was the portal to over there? Who was the person that I assume you must have met somebody who's like, hey, lady, you've got a future over here. Like, what are the mechanics of getting into that world?
That's so polite. That's a very polite way to say that. I appreciate that, Jeff. I was actually going to the gym one night. I was in the pool and I was swimming because I was still able-bodied in that way. And I was into super cardio and fitness and longevity and stamina. And these two women, and this is about 11 o'clock at night, these two women come in. And I mean, they're a little overweight. And at that time, I was of ideal body weight. And for all of you women out there, you know how hard that is after the age of something, right? So I was pretty proud of that. And these women were not physically what I would expect. Can I say stripper on your show?
Yeah, you can say stripper.
Okay. these are not
we discourage actual stripping on the show, but we're fine talking about it.
You know, I'm just now trying to hold a marriage together for the first time in 40 years. So I think I'll avoid doing that, Jeff.
I support that.
Okay.
A couple women walk in and they're heavier than you might expect for sex workers.
They were not visually what I would have expected. I mean, they had figures that were not awful, but you expect a Las Vegas dancer to look a certain way, to have a figure that's just like they walk into the room and people go, damn, right? Mm-hmm. That was not it. But they were the nicest people, and they got me out of the pool. They said, hey, come here a second. I'm like, all right, what do they want? And I'm like, I really don't have time for this shit, right? So I'm being polite because I'm not a rude woman unless, you know, the time calls for it. And they said, why don't you come try out with us? They're having tryouts, auditions, right? For those of you out there, in order for a woman to be hired as a dancer at a club, she has to get on stage and prove that she's not going to get stage fright, or she's going to get completely stoned on her first day, mm-hmm. right? Or be a problem in one way or another. They got to check you out legally and stuff like that. That's what the audition is for. So they said, why don't you come in? I said, maybe a stripper. Are you serious? At the time, I'm a married woman, and this is husband number three. Yeah, no, husband number three. Don't judge me. Husband number three already had the three kids. And so I went to him and I told my now ex-husband, I said, you're not going to believe the wildest shit just happened to me at the gym. And he said, what? And I told him about the goofy looking strippers and that they told me I should go audition. And he says, baby, you got this. And I'm like, really? You're actually telling your wife to go audition for a strip club? And he's like, why the hell not? I didn't think he actually thought that I was going to get hired, right? Mm-hmm. Because at the time, this was before my first set of implants. That was a blast, by the way. And before, I was totally flat-chested, had this unusual pear shape going and a big butt and thick legs. And I walk in and bam, they hire me on the spot. And I was like, son of a bitch.
Okay.
What do I do now?
So you said you I think you said earlier it was 5 years stripping before it became performing on camera.
No, I was actually stripping for about 3 years. I only danced for I got that timeline wrong. I danced for 8 years, but 3 or 4 years after I started dancing, I was discovered by a modeling agent at the club. I mean, these people, they go in and they kind of scout the place out. Hey, who's the new talent? Is there anybody that can make us money by acting like a degenerate? And I happen to be the one.
And this was in Vegas. Is that where you're from?
No, I'm from back east, but I landed in Vegas right after 9/11. And I just stayed here. I love this city. I love it here.
So you're in Vegas, you're stripping at a club, some people walk in, and what's their approach? They come up to you and they say, you could make more money if you're willing to do other things, or what?
I took a pay cut becoming a porn star. And that's the God honest truth, Jeff. I mean, I used to make the club so much money, they actually put my picture on the ATM machine. I shit you not. Men that go to strip clubs, I mean, they are deliberately served alcohol to inebriate them to a point where their decisions fail them and their finances. That was the whole point of having me there, was to get people drunk and to get them to depart from their money, whether it be cash or credit cards or even going to the bank.
So, okay, having ATMs and strip clubs with strippers' pictures on them, that's probably a whole other conversation. Mm-hmm. But okay, so you said you took a pay cut. I mean, okay, yeah. then why? Why would you make that switch? Is it just a safer environment or more control of your hours or what?
I had developed some really up habits as a dancer. I became enamored with the idea that I had so much power and control over men and women, because women are not immune to the power of a strip club, you know, entertainer. And I began to and continued to have not so legal interactions with people who were giving me money. I don't know what I can and can't say on your show. Statute of limitations up or what? Like,
I don't know how long ago that was, but I think we're picking up what you're putting down.
Okay, then, you know, it was something.
So basically what you're saying is when they, you know, what there's like the back room, right? Like you go back there and like whatever. And so you're making lots of money.
So much.
And so you felt like, did you feel like going into the film industry was actually potentially a way of kind of like going more legit almost? Because at least I think you're not breaking a law technically.
Specifically and exactly the reason that I started making films for a living, because I was terrified I was going to go to jail. I knew it. It was just a matter of time before somebody got a bug up their butt and said, okay, bitch, you're off. You know, we got to take you in. And there's a physical health concern involved with, you know, introducing yourself to so many people a day. And it wasn't one person a day. It was many people a day. And so, I loved every second of it. Oh, it was so great. That's why I said yes.
So let me interject right here, right? This is where somebody out there might be wanting to judge you. Like, oh, she's doing this multiple times a day. Talk to me though. Like, what year was this roughly?
Oh God, I started dancing in 2007.
Okay, so I'm calibrating for inflation. This was like 15 years ago. How much money were you making?
Oh, Jesus. For what I wasn't spending? I know that the 1 year I grossed the club $500,000 in alcohol sales.
And did you get a cut of that? I mean, for, you know, if you don't want me to ask, I won't. But I mean, I'm trying to quantify the allure, the enticement, you know, for a woman who's the allure. Yeah. I'll let you unpack that pun when you want. But yeah, I mean, for a woman who's basically been taught at traditional jobs, hey, you're going to be objectified and frankly, reverse discriminated against in the mainstream workforce. And now you're off doing this other thing. Like, how much are you making, you personally, if I can ask?
Oh God, between $200,000 and $300,000 a year that I didn't actually blow right away.
So you're taking home $250,000. You probably, if you'd had more disciplined spending habits, you could have been taking home a lot more than that.
I kick myself for that now.
So yeah, I mean, I think it's easy to sit here and say, oh, you know, let me look down my nose at this person. But I mean, I think there's a lot of people out there that for $30,000 or $40,000 a month would, you know, it's kind of like, you know, until you've walked a mile in somebody's shoes, who are you to judge, right?
Well, I know
people that corrupted for a lot less than that, frankly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I know people who would be corrupted for a compliment. Right.
That's actually a really astute point. What is it that people do on a daily basis that we trade the life that we could have or the life that we dreamed of for acceptance from people we don't even like?
I agree with you. And I refuse to be one of those people. I wanted to kind of connect the bits in the timeline for you. As I was trying to be like everyone else, and I'm clear I'm not like everyone else, I had learned that people would show their poker hand, would express their weaknesses with intimate interest, if you will. And that's why I became such an effective salesperson while stripping, was because I was able to speak the language of what someone's weakness is. And it sounds like a horrible thing to say, but as a salesperson, I needed to know where the crack in the armor was so I could get through there and infuse that person with the idea they wanted to give me money. So the sexual interest that I inappropriately dealt with for most of my life became an ally for me.
Yeah, that's kind of the point I'm making, is that everything underneath this exists already, is already there. It's already your reality. You're already dealing with it every day. At a certain point, you just said, instead of this being something that I suffer for, it's going to be something that I profit from.
And I do that in all things that I do. All things I do. I'm not going to allow something to control the way that I appreciate the life around me. I'm going to make it work for me.
So then some people come in and they say, hey, there's a you know, more legit, less, you know, there's a way to do this where you don't have to worry about going to jail, right? So you go into that life.
Well, you want to make some money.
Yeah. So I mean, one of the things I'm really interested in understanding is, you know, like it's easy for people to sit and judge people involved in pornography, but at the same time, that whole industry exists because of the billions and billions of people that consume the pornography. And, you know, what I'm sure would love to cast stones from that side of the equation. But, you know, I would really love to answer the question, and you can answer this however you see fit. But the question of, hey, when you're consuming pornography, you're supporting an industry that does X, that operates according to X or does X to people, or at least some subset of the industry is, I mean, you tell me, like, how bad is it? There's people moralize about this stuff all the time, but it's like nobody ever actually says, hey, let's get somebody from the industry to tell us what's really going on.
And every person who has an opinion about the adult industry and pornography is right for different reasons. I've seen all of the angles. I've seen all of the dark, you know, the dark corners of the industry that people don't want to talk about. They don't want to be exposed, because when these dark corners of the pornographic industry are exposed, that makes people pay attention to the dark corners that they don't want people to know about them. So the people that are criticizing are telling on themselves.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying. You said it more articulately and succinctly. Thank you.
Yeah, but you're richer.
I don't know. It's, I mean, you are certainly making some pretty good money there for a minute, it sounds like. But no, I mean, I guess to put it bluntly, how bad is it to support that industry as a consumer?
My personal experience with the industry was not a bad one. Not right away. There was a major culture shift a few years ago. It started about 6 or 7 years ago when I started to notice the kind of stories they were asking sex workers to perform on camera. And it was disturbing, the introduction of the family-oriented ideas they wanted people to pretend. And I kind of asked around about it, and I'm complaining to my agent. I'm like, what is this crap? What are we entertaining pedophiles now?
So yeah, double click on family oriented storyline. Like you can just say it. Like, what are we talking about? Like we want you to enact a scene of like a father raping his daughter or something. Like, what are you talking about?
The industry doesn't use the word rape anymore because payment processors won't allow it because it's encouraging violence. Right. Even though it's all essentially the same thing. They call them stepmommy, stepdaddy, because saying daddy and mommy is illegal. So they'll bypass the illegality of it by calling it step, because it's not illegal to have sex with a step parent. So what they are doing is they are simulating sexual situations between family members. And that to me was where I drew the line. I said, this is disgusting. What are you doing? Who are you trying to entertain with this? And they said, don't worry about it. You're not hurting anybody. It's just something different for people to check into. And I started to see the change in the temperature of society. And what I mean by that is the demand to make more of it, because people found it desirable. And it got me thinking, who are these people? Who's getting sexually excited by the idea of fucking his stepdaughter? I mean, one, okay, being a married man fantasizing about another woman is a perfectly normal thing for people that aren't like super devout in their faith. You know, the thing about lust, that's the sin and all that stuff. But, you know, every man and every woman fantasizes about having a new partner, especially if they've been together for a while. So that wasn't offensive to me. What was offensive to me was that it had to be his wife's child. Who the fuck does that?
So you're saying 6 or 7 years ago, I mean, this is, first of all, I'm fascinated by the idea of, it's kind of like examining society from the bottom up.
Yeah.
You know, of like, what can you tell about a society by its vices? And you're saying that the general demand for pornography started to trend towards children or family relations. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but is that kind of what you're suggesting?
At first, it was the family relations. At first, it was the pretend, the step family, the step brother, step sister, also disgusting to me. And then they would get
And just to be clear, when you say step, you're saying that they might as well have just dropped that for all intents and purposes. That's purely just a code for how to get it through.
That was just for legal purposes to post that. But they would even make us and suggest us to drop the step in our language until the editors kept getting their stuff sent back from the websites, because they say we can't publish this unless the talent says the word step or actually establishes with dialogue that there is no blood relation. But in other independent contractors, independent studios would deliberately connect mommy and son. Like, I gave birth to this person, now I'm going to do sexual things. And it blows my mind that there's anybody who's demanding it be made.
Yeah, so 6 or 7 years ago, I mean, does this correlate with anything that you have connected it to in society? Like, what shifted?
Yes. And it started with that, but it got worse. Now, what is possibly worse than a stepmom and an adult stepson having sexual relations?
Obviously,
what could possibly be worse than that?
Yeah, make them younger, obviously.
Yes. Make them look younger, make them look like 8, 9, 10, and 12-year-olds by finding the smallest bodied women and making them appear to be children, boys and girls. And I started seeing that a lot. And when that started happening, I was like, yo, I want nothing to do with this. I want absolutely nothing to do with this. You are not even trying to hide the fact that you're trying to make them look like kids. So I started doing different kinds of scenes. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar, there are different genres of erotic entertainment. There's the, you know, the straight on, let's get it on and be done with it and turn the movie off. And then there's the what's called fetish. These are the fun ones, like the wrestling and the boxing and, you know, the superhero pretend stuff. That's a little less intimate and erotic, still has an element to it. And then there's the more extreme stuff. And that was what ended my career.
Hey there, real quick, I just wanted to let you know, I have been concentrating a lot lately on providing tons of value to my text message community. This could be random thoughts, this could be letting you be the first to know about an event I'm planning or a special I'm running or a free training I'm hosting. Anyway, just shoot me a text to get subscribed. The number is 702-996-3926. Thanks so much. Let's get back to the podcast.
When you say it ended your career, you mean that you saw that going in a direction you just didn't want to be associated with the industry anymore?
Or no, that was the final straw.
Okay.
That was the final straw because at that point I realized for the level of income I was making, and at the end I was making so much money, I felt like that's it, I'm done. I've got enough. I'm good to put the money aside. I'm good until I figure something else out. I had planned to go to film school, which is actually how I found Entre by accident. I was going to film school. I saw you come up on this computer and I'm like, oh, well, this sounds nice. And here we are a year later. Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah. I'm glad I got my hooks in.
Totally effective.
You've probably snared many more people on camera than I have, though. I will say that.
I'm not done yet.
Actually, I don't know. I think my ads are running like between 30 and 50 million impressions a month right now across Google and Meta. So I might be catching up.
You got the star on that one.
This conversation's gotten weird. I'm interested though. Like, do you have a theory on, because obviously what you're saying is horrifying.
Yes.
This isn't some ivory tower sociologist theory. This is consumer demand.
I watched it happen.
Explicit material depicting familial relationships, ideally getting younger and younger.
Yep.
And there are millions and millions of people that clearly have an appetite. Do you have a theory on what the hell has happened in our society? I mean, obviously with Sound of Freedom out, and you know, I know him, but I've met Tim Ballard and I support OUR, and I know there's people that say that it's not a legit organization. And I'm like, that's bullshit. I know people that have been on those missions with them. Like, this is real shit that's happening out there that isn't just happening fictionally on camera. I mean, there's an even darker side to it of it, driving human trafficking. So like, what has happened in our society? Do you have a theory?
I have a proven conclusion about why the industry took that turn. with the publication of so many websites that did not charge people, these free pornographic websites, they get paid because of the ad space they sell. So when content creators no longer have sales coming out of the stuff that they make, they send all of their footage over to these free websites. People don't have to pay for that. The advertisers pay to be on the site. So they're able to access porn for free. Well, who is not able to pay for new content that they would like to see made? Who is it still illegal to make content for?
Yeah, and this like pedophiles.
Pedophiles. When pedophiles are afraid of getting caught exchanging, you know, footage between each other, they go to the next best thing, which is something still legal, morally questionable, right? And it still suits the needs. So they're looking at this 18 to 25 year old woman who looks like she's 8 and done on purpose to look like that. Then they all come out of the woodworks. And when other people see this, they find themselves digging in, you know, sinking into a dark hole, that this is so bad, this is so taboo, that then the regular free stuff is no longer going to satisfy them. So they're overwhelmed by the oh my God, what is this? And it's caused more people to turn to an interest in very young looking men and women.
Yeah,
boys and girls.
I was listening to Jordan Peterson interview Tim Ballard the other day, and they were talking about how, call it sexual fetishes or kinks or whatnot, that they're sort of like, they're iterative and they're progressive, right? Like they get more and more sequentially depraved.
Yes.
And so and then once you, it's kind of like a rubber band. Once you stretch it to X level of depravity, it doesn't naturally want, like what used to be stretched doesn't feel stretched anymore. Like there's kind of like no coming back. I don't want to say there's no coming back. That's not what I mean. But I mean, by nature, it goes deeper over time.
Oh yeah. And it burns injuries into the brain, not physically, but mental. It burns mental injuries into the brain, where the brain can no longer reach a level of excitement by seeing something that would be considered average in porn. Right. They have to go to the extreme to get that energy rush and that hormone release in order to simply sexually function.
So this is fascinating, although it's highly disturbing. What I'm hearing you say, I think, is that let's say you have the majority of pornography consumers that are into consensual adult relations.
Yeah.
And then you have a small group, a smaller group that has this dark desire for whether it's incestuous and or involving juveniles, right? Or the pedophilia.
Yep.
But because the platforms are now able to serve content to that latter group, that smaller group, that means the larger group is now being exposed to that.
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, they're being stretched in that direction too now, just by virtue of being exposed. So it's actually creating content for a small segment of the market is normalizing that content to the larger segment of the market.
Yes. And creating people who normally would not have an interest in young looking lovers to then view the world outside of that entertainment as a sexual platter. So when I came to the terms with that, I stopped doing scenes on that side of the industry and went to do the more extreme, physically extreme things. I ask you not to ask me to describe that, because it's not the proudest moment of my lifetime, but that was extreme, and I acquired an injury, but it was already, I was looking for a way out at this point, because I saw what was happening on the news and people in communities were talking about this, you know, child rape and pedophilia being a real thing. And, you know, I heard about it as a younger adult that this was an isolated incident. One guy in a community, a state away, got caught hurting kids, but now it is so common. And I had to sit down and ask myself, why is that the case? Well, entertainment reflects society. Entertainment, you know, like the media, likes to manipulate society. So if media can manipulate society, then entertainment is also creating ideas as well. And I wanted nothing to do with that little boy or girl not going home a whole person or not going home at all. I couldn't do it one more day.
So this is, I mean, you know, I had no idea where this conversation was going to go, but my instinct said it was going to be one worth having. And I mean, this to me is just horrifyingly relevant.
Yeah.
You're basically describing, because I'm sure like, you know, so many people right now are like, what is up with this pedophilia nonsense that seems to be, is it more ubiquitous, or is it just getting talked about more because of media? But what I'm hearing you say is that the actual pornography industry to some degree is shading mainstream sexuality more in that direction by serving up that imagery.
They are trying to produce and introduce the next best thing, the most shocking thing. You don't see the glamour of, you know, a husband and wife, or a man and his lover, or a woman and her lover having, you know, this high production value background. Of course, there are still companies that do that, but it's not often anymore. It's not often they put the thought and, you know, into who are they affecting by this. It's all about the money, Jeff. And I didn't want to live my life, you know, making money at the expense of hurting someone who wasn't even old enough to say no yet. I couldn't live with myself.
So you're saying really from within that, I mean, you're taking a pretty definitive moral position that at this point, the pornography, being a part of the pornography industry directly,
yes,
is being a part of the pedophilia industry indirectly. Question mark. Do you think that?
Question mark. They are definitely related. They're definitely related. Now, if you see a grown man in a diaper pretending to get physically aroused by his mommy breastfeeding him, I don't know what else to call it.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know what else to call it. But it got more and more disturbing as my departure came to pass. But the day I walked out, I don't know if I could talk about this. We're talking about like getting boned on camera, but I actually had a spiritual calling, and I still feel so strongly about this. It drives everything I do in every day, every moment, every thought I have. Because when I realized what it was that the work I was doing to people, I mean, people who didn't even watch the movies, but the people that would hurt them would see this footage. And I had a literal come to Jesus moment, and I don't want to cry. Yo. Okay. Right. So I'm getting ready to leave, over there. I'm in the Czech Republic, and I had just had a really bad day, and I had torn the muscles in the right side of my chest. I sustained some pretty serious internal injuries. It took me about 7 months to recover mostly from. Like, I doubt I'll ever be normal again in some ways.
Can I interject with a question there?
Yeah,
I don't want to be, you know, I don't need to know the details of what you're talking about.
Sure.
But basically what you're talking about is this, call it extreme porn.
Sure.
Like, it really physically injures people.
Oh, yeah.
So that's another thing that the pornography industry is doing. I mean, you're shading society in this horrifying direction to sexually objectify children. And also, you have people literally injuring themselves just so they can keep pushing the boundaries of what the consumers are demanding.
Yes. At the time, I thought that my only options were pretend to hurt children or people made to look like children. I need to make sure that's legally claimed, right? Because every person on camera is like double, triple, quadruple checked through many stages in the process to make sure and verify they're adults. But these people are made to look like they're underage. It was, my choices were either that, pretend to have sex with my character's husband's son or daughter, or, you know, it just, I found it made my skin crawl. So I went overseas and I started to do work over there, which was physically unimaginable. Like, it's a whole different ballgame over there in Europe. Those people are crazy.
So basically you're either, I hurt myself psychologically or I hurt myself.
Or I hurt somebody else.
That's my choice. Yeah. Okay.
And so, I said, I don't want to do either.
And you had this moment where you said, I'm out.
I did. No, I had this moment where I had just finished filming of this movie that I was doing. And I was just looking into the studio where the scene had been done. And I heard the voice. It came like from above. It came into my chest. And he said, you're done. And I was like, cool, I'm out. And that was my last day. We have an understanding. He and I have a language that we get it. And I knew what it meant. It meant you don't want to hurt people, but you don't want to get hurt yourself. Your only option is to go. So I made that choice.
I actually want to like pause on that moment for a second. I remember I used to, in my 20s, I used to attend a church, and I was the director of a Sunday school class, which I'm not like I didn't grow up in a really religious environment. I don't have like any, you know, let's call it credentials in that area. I was sincerely trying to be a part of something that I thought was positive, and I still think is positive, for the record. But I remember I told a story about that I had actually been at a Halloween party, and there had been a stripper at the Halloween party, and she had had a tattoo of a cross on her calf.
Ooh.
And I had talked to her at the Halloween party about her faith, and she was a very spiritual person who worked as a stripper. And she said, you know, Jesus, you know, he mentored prostitutes. He spent time, you know, if I don't need Jesus, who does, was basically what she said to me.
Yeah.
And I actually shared that story in the Sunday school, and I was reprimanded.
For sharing the word prostitute?
No, just for even connecting the idea of grace with, you know, people that don't do what was, you know, let's call it church approved or whatnot.
Right.
I just wanted to like pause on that and say, like, I'm so, you know, this isn't to become religious or to try to, you know, evangelize to anybody listening, but like, how cool is it that part of you was still open in that moment where you could hear that and take action on it? And I don't know.
I had already been hearing who I call God. I worship Christ. I have faith in Christ. Not everybody calls God by the same name. So I was hearing messages like this is messed up, you know? And so I said, okay, well, this is messed up. You're right. I agree. I'm going to go do this instead, which was just as equally messed up for a different reason. But when the time came for me to hear that voice and for me to leave, I didn't question it. And I left myself without a safety net. And I had to trust, but I believed it so strongly, Jeff. This is like a once in a lifetime voice I heard. And I don't mean like I need meds for schizophrenia. I mean, I heard a conviction come into my heart that was so powerful that anything that had to do with what I was doing on camera before, it all immediately stopped. It all immediately stopped. Now I had a fan site. I won't say the name of it because I don't want people going, you know, thinking I'm here to have them go looking for it. But they're a place where people can buy pictures and old videos that I've done. But even that's getting ready to shut down after a year, because after making $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a month doing that particular operation, in addition with this, it took me a while to be able to get it to a place where I no longer needed it. And that, how I did that was to build all of this.
So talk about all of this. You've got a whole new calling now, a whole new career, a whole new business, you know, doing amazing work in the world and helping a lot of people. Share about that, because that's obviously what initially drew me to the conversation. It's so inspiring.
I found such a beautiful freedom. And, you know, I don't know how many people who are watching you aren't American, but I was raised to love my country and to know about the freedoms our country provides and the people who work so hard to make that possible. So I've developed that attitude, that freedom from being enslaved by something was a beautiful thing. I felt enslaved by my love of money. And when I felt free from that trap that I put myself in, I understood why other people don't leave. I understand why there are women who are sex trafficked. And I mean, you know, we've had these conversations before, but I understand what it's about. I know the language. I know the formula that gets them there. And I also know the formula to help them out of it now that I know what it is that I do with communication and the foundations and the building blocks. And not only that, but just to heal from feeling so bad about making those initial decisions or screwing up someone's life. I know what all of it's like, and I know how to help somebody heal from it.
How many, like, if you have any sense of the preponderance of whether it's statistics or just anecdotal information of like how many people involved in that industry are there by some, like if you had to quantify it, there's some that are just there because they just like making a lot of money. There's some that are there because they're desperate and it was the only way they could make the money they felt they needed to make, maybe to take care of family or loved ones or something. Mm-hmm. And then there's people that are actually in a form of slavery, like they're there by force. Do you have any sense of that breakdown?
Yes, I do. The people who are trafficked, the people who are being forced to do adult entertainment or even sex work in general, they always keep themselves hidden because if they get caught and they try to get help for it, their lives could be in danger. They could be brutally beaten, crippled, or made to disappear by the people who have forced them to do the job. So it's not often to find people who are in that position, but there is a language that I speak, Jeff. I know the language, and I have the ability to draw details, dark, heavy details from people. Once I used to do it to make a living, and now I use that ability to find people who really need my help.
But so you're saying it's unusual to find them in the sense that they don't voluntarily expose themselves and say, "Hey, no. I'm here by force." But I mean, let's say somebody pulls up Pornhub and there's mm-hmm. and they scroll through a few times and there's 1,000 videos that flash across their screen.
Yep.
How many of them would you guess involve somebody who's there, who's being forced to be there?
Oh God, I'm gonna say at least a third.
Wow.
I mean, when we say
are you saying a third of pornography to some degree involves slavery?
There are different kinds of slavery, but yeah, someone who's forced to be there who doesn't want to be there for one reason or another by someone other than themselves. We say at least a third.
Okay, so then of the remaining, let's say 60%,
mm-hmm.
are there, I mean, I guess it almost doesn't really matter because
it does matter.
30 to 40% slavery. I mean, if we were going to Taco Bell and it was like, hey, well, don't worry, not every Taco Bell worker is a slave, only 30 to 40% of them, like
right.
Categorically, we would reject Taco Bell.
That's true. There are others who are doing it against their better judgment, but not by other people. And those are the ones that develop addiction issues. The people who need to, for one reason or another, numb themselves to the job they no longer want to do. So they're essentially being forced to do the job by their own decisions, by their own circumstances. But the people that are especially men and women who are threatened or coerced to do like the cam work or the sex work, the actual prostitution. We're never going to know who all of them are, but I've developed a way to see them because I used to be among them. So I recognize them and I have a way of speaking to men and women who are feeling trapped. I have a way of reaching through that barrier of protection they have to, you're not one of us, you won't understand. I'm like, yeah, I do understand. And that's when the communication begins.
So I've read some of the testimonials on your website about some of the coaching and support you give people. Mm-hmm. Can you talk in practical terms about like, what are you helping people do now and how do you do it to the extent you can share?
Well, I don't mind, of course, you know, ethics and stuff, and that it would just be wrong. Every person's different. Every person has different goals. Every person has a different vision of the future that they want to create. Not everybody's unhappy with sex work in general. A couple are just unhappy with a part of it. So their goal is to transform the power of their residual income to making, you know, even more residual income so they can have a less frequent activity in being on camera or to be off camera altogether. And then another person might have become infected with something, not saying anyone in particular, but someone else might have become infected with something that prevents them from working again, and they need more immediate advanced results. So their plan is going to be different. And then we have someone who's still thinking about it and coming to terms with the fact that this might not be what they want anymore, but they're not sure yet. So what I do is I help them establish goals. First, I ask them what their vision is. Thanks, Jeff. You taught me all this, by the way.
Coaching is coaching in any category.
Right? I mean, like the whole first month and a half of taking Entre Institute, I learned all of this and I put that to work for me. This is actually how I teach people now to transform their lives from a place of feeling desperate and stuck into feeling free and capable is to what's your perfect life.
Right. Well, I mean, no, please continue.
Now we reverse engineer it. And then we get to a point of reverse engineering that perfect life to where they are at, where they're at right now. So we've established something by reverse. I mean, I learned that from you.
Yeah, so start with the outcome you want and work backwards, right?
Yeah. But,
you know, I think that, I mean, I hope everybody listening is thinking, you know, because, you know, invariably the audience of the show tends toward people looking for change, transformation, growth in their life. I mean, the show is called Unlock Your Potential. And so, you know, the good news here is Elizabeth is helping people that are, let's say, as immersed in a life that they may not want as you could possibly imagine, right?
Yes.
That's probably a much more extreme case of transformation than somebody that's like, I'm kind of burned out on my job selling insurance and I really wish I could start an online side hustle or I could just pivot my career, right? Like, my point is, you're helping people make dramatic transformations that are frankly unimaginable to most people.
Yes.
And that speaks to the power of what's possible.
I got to tell you, it's a little bit of a celebration, Jeff. And I wanted to keep this quiet because I don't want to spook anybody who's in the industry who might be listening to this right now. Your identity is always completely confidential. I will never out you for any questions you have or any journey that you're thinking about embarking upon. But Jeff, I have, over the last 10 days, I have been contacted by more porn stars who agree with my choice to leave, and they're wondering how it's possible for them. And I am so overjoyed by that. I am encouraged to keep going every day. And we had come in contact with an actual trafficked individual who was providing in-person services, and she didn't want to, and she didn't know how to get out. So it's a slow-going process with some, and others are much more quick to jump into their new goals. But yeah, this is actually happening. This is working, and people are going to see more and more very famous people among those who they don't hear about leaving sex work in the near future.
I mean, it's so cool. I'm not going to lie. I feel great pride that anything that I've done in my life has been a part of this particular application that in a million years I never would have imagined.
We all do God's work in ways that we don't know until it's done, Jeff.
Well, that I deeply believe as well. Mm-hmm. And so I suppose I shouldn't be surprised.
Right. But you said something a long time ago, and I've seen a lot of the earlier works of yours. You didn't believe in yourself, and everyone around you didn't believe in you. But it was so super important for you to feel that way so you could understand people like me and the people I help, so I could reach them, because you felt that bad during that period in your life. I wouldn't be able to do what I do if you had not gone through all of that. And there are people just like me who you've helped, who are going to help other people. It's exponential.
Yeah, thank you. I love the way you're calling that out. That, you know, I remember one of the books that had a great impact when I was younger was C.S. Lewis, The Problem of Pain.
And
it's basically why do people suffer in a world that's presumably overseen by a just God? Why do people suffer? And you know, certainly it's not ours to know all the ways that the world works, but that transmutation mm-hmm. of suffering, which, by the way, the Latin root of the Latin word for suffer is passio, which is also the root of the word passion. That transmutation of that suffering is what allows us to be able to connect to other people's suffering and mm-hmm. inspire them. And yes. I agree with you. If I hadn't suffered, I wouldn't be able to help as many people. And ditto for you, and ditto for the next yeah. person, ditto for the next person. So the question isn't, oh, Lord, why me? Why am I suffering? The question, right. the question is God asking back, because you have an opportunity here to transmute this. What are you going to do with it?
Yeah, he told me, he says, you were right when you learned early on that you are a warrior and that you're a protector. You were just doing it for the wrong people. He has jokes, Jeff. He's got jokes. So like we laugh all the time about about my misunderstandings, right? But he tells me things in my heart. And I know after seeing the very first person that I helped, I'm never going to be the same again. And my conviction to keep doing what I'm doing is to prevent someone who's little now from being hurt by someone who thought that what they were watching on their TV or their tablet was a good idea. So with the more and more people who see that they can make a living elsewhere, the fewer people that are on camera entertaining those people who are hurting children. That is my ultimate goal.
Well, that's powerful. Mm-hmm. That's probably a strong note to end on. How can the world, I suspect anybody who's listened to this is fascinated and intrigued and would like to know how to follow you or learn more from you, or even perhaps they're in need of services. So where would you direct people?
Oh, well, I live a new life now, Jeff. I'm sorry. See, like that's my father talking. He's got a sense of humor. My name is Elizabeth Spraggins. The business is named All Joy Inspired. I am everywhere. I made it a point after learning from the men and women who you trusted to teach your students how to get things done and how to do it right. I am on every platform. I am listed, but the easiest way to reach me is to email me at elizabethspraggins@alljoyinspired.com or go to Elizabeth's, excuse me, oh my Lord. Oh, I'm so amped to be here. I'm all a little bit twisty right now. Alljoyinspired.com is my coaching website. And then alljoyinspired.store was created because the sales from that store generate the ability for us to provide services for people who can't afford them. So I have both.
Wonderful. We'll put those links in the description. Elizabeth, I said, I had no idea where we were going to go, but I was confident it would be someplace interesting. And I don't think that this is disappointed. Thank you. This has been incredible.
It has been such an honor to actually do this. Thank you so much, Jeff.
No, it's my pleasure. And of course, to all you viewers and listeners out there, as I tell you every time, you're the best part of the show. You're why. Although today I might challenge you on that. I think Elizabeth's pretty awesome too. But you are the best part of this show. You're why I do what I do every single day. And I'm so glad we got to spend this time together. Can't wait to see you on the next one. Take care.
Hey, it's Jeff here. If you liked this episode of Unlock Your Potential, it would mean so much if you would like and share the episode on whatever platform you're listening or viewing on. And if you really like what we're doing here and you enjoy this podcast, please consider leaving a review. There is so much work that goes into these episodes, and you leaving a positive review lets us know that that work is reaching people, and especially it helps us reach other people. Your review could be the reason that someone else decides to tune in, check out this podcast, and unlock their potential and ultimately level up the quality of their life. So thank you so much for your support and for listening, especially if you like or share or leave a review. Thank you for helping us spread the word, and thank you for unlocking your potential to go make the world and your world a better place.